Have you ever felt yourself start to close off after a moment of connection? Not during the conversation, but later when you're alone and your body finally catches up. Your shoulders tighten, your chest feels heavy, and suddenly you want quiet, space, and no more questions from anyone. Nothing went wrong, no one crossed a line, but something about being open, about being seen, pushed your nervous system past its edge. I call this the being seen overload, that moment when vulnerability lands in your body before your nervous system is ready for it. If you're hearing yourself in this, you're not cold, detached, or broken. Your nervous system is doing exactly what it learned to do, protect you through emotional distance. Hey, I'm Dr. Regina, PhD, and this is Divergent Paths, the podcast where we talk about all kinds of things late-diagnosed neurodivergent folks experience and how to work with your brain instead of fighting it. If you want extra tools and support, you can subscribe to my weekly newsletter, Nerd Notes. The link is in the show description. In this episode, Russ and I are talking about avoidant attachment styles and how they show up for neurodivergent people, especially when closeness triggers protection instead of comfort.
You know, I was sort of like the open that you just did.
Yes.
It felt like music.
It felt like music?
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like your shoulders tighten, your chest feels heavy, mom spaghetti. It was making me feel like
it had a cadence.
It really did. Good. It really did. Or maybe I was just avoiding what you're talking about. In some weird way, you know, I changed it. I went that direction. I went to, you know, tune out in my head with Eminem while you were doing that, because I'm nervous about today's show because I haven't prepared as much as I maybe should have.
Maybe.
Who knows? Is that avoiding an attachment? I'm avoiding the attachment of this file to my
no. No. That was an absolute reach.
Several feet away
from your reach.
Exactly. Okay, so tell me, what is avoidant attachment?
So avoidant attachment, like we talked about with anxious attachments, avoidant attachment is a learned strategy that you would have developed to create safety through independence. So being separate and not needing anyone and not relying on anyone. And for people who lean toward an avoidant attachment, closeness triggers a threat response. It triggers danger, not comfort. It's exactly the opposite for people with anxious attachments. Closeness makes them feel comforted. For avoidance, closeness is scary and threatening and creates a sense of danger. If this came out of, well, go ahead. You had a question.
Well, is this with everybody or like a particular group of people? Can you feel like there's certain people that you're not feeling this towards, but there's other groups of people, like maybe there's only a couple people in like your inner circle type of thing that right. you're not with, but then everybody else you're doing this?
Generally with attachment styles in general, we see kind of a dominant, right? So like everybody can use their right or left hand, right? Like, but generally we prefer one, and you have like, you can brush your teeth if you're right-handed, you can brush your teeth with your left hand, but it won't be as natural. You're not likely to pick up the toothbrush to brush with your non-dominant hand. You can brush your teeth. It's going to be a little awkward. It's not the thing you sort of default to. So generally, when we think about attachment styles, we're looking at the thing that you default to. What when you are triggered for whatever reason, or you're, you know, in a relationship of any kind, and you are experiencing that relationship, your attachment style is going to be that thing that is most comfortable. So someone who had a dominant avoidant attachment would generally feel this need to pull back and a great need for space in their relationships in order to feel secure. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's just a pattern that has kind of evolved. So it might be that you have a couple of relationships that you feel more psychological safety with, and you might have what we'll get to down the line, a secure attachment with those few people. And then depending on how a relationship evolved, if you did kind of like have a little bit of all the styles, maybe you do have some people you tend to be more avoidant with, and you do have people you are more anxious with. But in general, in childhood, this is developed. It's developed through your relationship with your primary caregivers, whoever was there for you or wasn't there for you or was inconsistently there for you is where all of this is going to kind of unpack from.
So how does ADHD and autism like amplify these?
For people who are neurodivergent, for people who have ADHD and people who are autistic, there's a higher need for regulation, right? Because you have a brain that is picking up on so many patterns, because there is so much information that you're taking in. If, like we've talked about, if you're masking, you're spending a lot of energy masking. So, you know, you need a lot of time to regulate. That is especially true for people with an avoidant attachment. They would need even more time than their ADHD might demand or their autism might demand. They would need an even greater sense of that because mm-hmm. they have an avoidant attachment. You would see kind of this, you know, connection hangover, this emotional hangover, where after like an intense period of connection with someone and a high amount of intimacy, they're going to be pulling away. They want that closeness and they want that connection, but they shy away from the vulnerability at the same time. And they're often like, because, you know, emotions run really big for neurodivergent brains and neurodivergent nervous systems. They tend to be read because they want to close off from it, right? Because feelings are scary when you have an avoidant attachment. And if you have really big feelings because you're neurodivergent, you want to be as able to contain those as possible. So you might come off as kind of cold or detached or not really connecting.
Late diagnosed folks, like, why is it hitting them? And does it hit them especially hard?
Absolutely. Because, you know, all of this is interplaying. So it could be that the way an undiagnosed family went, right? If, you know, your parents didn't know that they had ADHD and you didn't know until you were an adult that you had ADHD, their nervous systems were going to be overwhelmed on the regular and they wouldn't have known or understood why or how to address that. And so that tendency to pull back, to need space, to need more space becomes even greater. And you know, masking plays into this because a lot of times people with avoidant attachments don't understand why they need the space and might ignore their need for space, and they'll push through and they'll, you know, try to create, you know, intimate relationships that make them uncomfortable and don't give themselves the time to recoup and to regulate in a way that actually serves, you know, the purpose that the avoidant attachment is trying to protect in the nervous system by pulling back from that connection. And if they're missing that and they're not kind of cluing into that, then that's going to make that even harder. And for a lot of people with ADHD and autism, there's a delayed processing. Like, you don't always understand the social situations you're in until after. You don't know how you were feeling until you've had time to step away and to reflect on it.
You mentioned the notes that it's they may be labeled as too much or too sensitive.
Sure. And too rigid.
Too rigid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You definitely see, especially for people with autism definitions, because autism tends to lean toward wanting regulation through the control of schedule, right? And mm-hmm. the control of time and consistency in schedule. And so kids who are like that, who are not identified as children will seem like really rigid kids and will continue that through adolescence and into adulthood. You know, that avoidance isn't them wanting to be out of it. All of this is self-protection. Anxious attachment as well is the way you just learned to how to protect yourself. Getting a diagnosis does help with understanding this pattern as a need for managing dysregulation, not wanting that connection.
So you're talking a lot about like partners, relationships.
Mm-hmm. And friendships, yeah.
And well, how do those partners, those friends, how do they usually misunderstand this?
Right.
What is going on with this person? Like, why are they pulling me towards them and then pushing me away? Like, what
is right. Why is there this push pull? Yeah. Why is this like, oh, things went so well and we had such a great conversation and now I can't get them to return my text messages?
Right.
Well, let me pose that question back to you. How would you feel if, you know, I don't know, take a close friendship you have, maybe me.
Okay.
And you send me, we have a great conversation. We have a great episode where, you know, or, you know, because we talk before and after the episodes about our lives, you know, we don't reveal everything here, people. You know, we have these great conversations. And let's say after an episode, we had a great talk. And then you send me a message and you're like, hey, that was a great talk. You know, I'm really glad. Thanks for listening or whatever. And I read and you see that I read the message, but I don't respond to it. What happens for you in that? What are you thinking?
We try not to swear on here, but I'm thinking what the.
Right. Right. And that would be out of character for me because generally I am responsive. Right. Especially to, you know, my close friends, which you are one of, but, you know, it would be out of character. So it would flag in some way for you.
Right.
And if I came back to you, if you messaged me again and went, hey, did you see my message? And I came back and said, yeah, I just needed some space.
Right.
I seem like a jerk a little bit, right? Like, you know,
others, but yeah.
Maybe not, but
I would get it, but others may not. Right.
Right. Exactly. Like, yeah. And it depends a lot of how this is read depends on like we're running on a little number of years of friendship.
At least 10. Yeah.
So, you know, we have a lot of history to go on and you're like, Virginia's not answering my messages. Something's up. Like, and you might reach out because you're like, hey,
this means if you didn't get back after a certain amount of time, something was wrong.
Right. Like, exactly. Something's wrong. Something happened. And, you know, you would be wanting to check in on that because of that. Right. But that's because we have that foundation. Right. And, you know, not all of our relationships have that same kind of foundation.
So when you need that space, what's it about?
A lot of times it's about regulation. It's about, you know, needing to set a boundary that allows you to, you know, deal with your sensory overwhelm and to, you know, have just space to check back in on yourself. And that space when you're avoidant gives you that time to re-regulate your nervous system. You just need that alone time to do that. And, you know, it's not rejection. And that's kind of what I was trying to get to with this scenario is like, you wouldn't read me not responding to you as me rejecting you. But somebody that didn't have as solid of a relationship might read that, oh, they left me on read as they don't like me and don't want to talk to me. And I've been too much and I've asked too much or whatever else.
Right.
I think my anxious attachment is coming in here.
So
because I have a hard time reading this attachment style.
Right.
Because it's not my default. Anxious is my technically I think secure is my default, but like when I get stressed and when I'm not feeling connected to my partner, partner or friend or whatnot, I will lean anxious.
Gotcha. So is this a bit of a cycle? Are you like, we've talked a lot about in different episodes of things kind of like, you know, spiraling in a certain way. Like,
yeah.
Is that do you describe that for me? What does that feel like?
Yeah, well, there is for however things work, there so often end up being someone with an anxious leaning attachment and someone with an avoidant leaning attachment being in a relationship together.
Gotcha. Okay.
There is often this draw, which creates that push-pull that you mentioned, right? And so, you know, anxious attachments are wanting reassurance when they feel uncertain about their connection. And avoidant attachments want space because closeness starts to feel overwhelming. So when you get these two together, like anxious is going after the avoidant and the avoidant is leaning away from the anxious, and you
triggering
have
each other.
Like,
yeah.
Right. They're triggering each other just unnatural, like what their nervous systems have been, you know, trained to want is in opposition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
they end up feeling more threatened instead of like being able to like,
this is a safe place. This is okay. I'm
right.
Yeah. Right. Right. Interesting.
Yeah. It can get stressful. Not that I'm speaking from direct experience or anything.
I can see it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what can people do like instead? Like what's the, and you know, this is like a silly question because I asked that like, oh, well, it's so easy. It's not, but
no,
what are some tips to get there to make this like feel better?
So I think the big thing is really naming it and being able to take the moment to say, I need space right now. What a lot of people in relationships with someone that has an avoidant attachment experience is they just disappear, right? And so I want to call this the exit ticket or the train station or something like that. The train station might be better, right? I need to get off the train for a bit. I'm going to, you know, get off the train and I'm going to go sightsee in a cave by myself in, you know, the side of a mountain.
Okay.
I'm going to go spelunking. I don't know.
Well, that sounds fun. Let me go with you. No, you can't go. I've got to do this by myself.
And just say ahead of time, which takes a level of emotional wherewithal to understand that you need it. And mm-hmm. and you set that and you set the expectations, because for all of us, expectations are difficult. They're especially difficult for people who are late diagnosed neurodivergent, because there were so many expectations that we didn't understand, that we didn't understand the demands for, we didn't understand the social rules around. So you have all of these expectations. So then if you're starting to lean into a relationship, and like I said, with that anxious avoidance cycle of kind of like both of them triggering each other, when you just kind of take the space without putting it in a container and saying, you know, I need tonight, I will touch base with you tomorrow sometime before noon or something like that. Something set a window for what the space is. Mm-hmm. And as someone who does have a, you know, anxious leaning attachment, I often need the reassurance to say the space is not because I want to be away from you.
Right.
The space is because I just need the space, right?
And how do you learn to say that? Like, how do
that's
you?
That's what you have to learn how to say.
Right. But that's hard, right?
It is hard. I mean, hard.
But it's also like, you know what? I'm not going to have back pain. Well, yeah, you are. Like, it's going to happen. Right. It's like, you can't like just talk yourself out of this.
Attachment styles were developed in childhood. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't know and you haven't been looking at this and you haven't been learning about this, starting to take those steps to recognize, to change, to build a different life does mean doing a lot of hard work. It means saying things that you might not have said before. I have said that one of the biggest things in unmasking for me relates directly to attachment styles, where I lean anxious, right? But I will get avoidant when I feel like my needs don't matter. I will just pull out and I won't care and I won't engage. I'm just done. And we may still be in a relationship, but I am out. And that's where I get pushed to a point. And that's where, because I've started to protect myself, because I've realized that the person I'm in a relationship with is no longer working for me and no longer wanting to foster a connection in a way that works for me. And then I just bail, such as it were.
I feel like so much of this just requires training. It's practice.
It takes messing it up a few times. It takes saying the scary things and being scared to say it, but you do it anyway. It's about learning that, yes, this exit, this train stop, whatever it is whatever metaphor you want to use for it, is you regulating yourself. You might not be able to do all of that emotional work when you're dysregulated, but you have to come back to it when you are. You have to come back and repair when you are. So if somebody got mad you went spelunking without them, when you come back into the relationship, you can't just be like, oh, I didn't go spelunking. You have to go, I am sorry that I needed this at this time and was not able to communicate it to you at that time. This is how I'm going to work on this to try to be different, more efficient, more open, et cetera, all of the things that we need to be working on. I never said any of this was going to be easy, Russ.
Right.
It's worth it, though.
Well, and that's where, you know, I mean, you've gone through this, you've seen this, and now, you know, with the coaching and what you're doing, you're helping people to be prepared with
this.
Which is awesome. I mean, that's one of the things that makes me feel good about the, you know, doing the show, that, and I get to make random M&M messages,
references and comments,
whatever.
And I get to come up with train analogies on the spot and exactly. Try to make it work.
Right. Well, you were on the right track.
If you do work with me, I do generally have, you know, the analogies I'm going to share with you in session when I am with my clients are usually well-researched and on where you're at and what you're going through. And I do tend to be like a little bit more together for those.
Well, I'm not there. That's the thing that makes it all together. But if somebody wanted to reach out to you for coaching?
In the show notes, there is, like I said at the start of the episode, there's a link to Nerd Notes, which is my weekly newsletter that unpacks some of the tools that we share during the podcast episodes. And there's also a link to book a 30-minute free clarity call where we can talk about the coaching packages that I have available. One of my coaching packages is called The Nerd Out. If you are interested in nerding out with me, click the link and sign up and let's chat.